Welcome to our second expanded budget committee meeting. We have a new fourth revision to our schedule of when departments are making presentations, so it's the purple version. You can save your blue one for archival purposes. And as usual, we have a flood of documents on our desks. Nathan will join us to chair the meeting in about 15 minutes, but until then I'll chair. We'll start with our health department. Again, I'll remind you that these are presentations, these are not voting meetings, and we're trying to get an overview of the entire budget before we begin our votes. You're trying to keep to rough schedule. We know that there's 27 departments and four different days to go through this, 3 or 4 hours each day, so we don't have all the time in the world, but we do want to tease out the significant issues facing the departments, particularly the OTR process, maybe one way to do that. So if we want to start, we have about 45 minutes planned for the health department. I don't know if you have particular divisions you want to start with. And we'll look in the big books at page 118.
Michael Diggin said, when there are more legislators here, we have a department head meeting this morning, and they have a message from back to the department. It's like we have a responsible legislature.
Okay. Go ahead, Alan.
I just want to give a few opening remarks, and then we'll talk about our OTRs and the specifics about there. So I just want to thank whoever was doing the scheduling for accommodating our schedule. We had some scheduling difficulties with staff, so we appreciate being given this time. And we know that 2009 is a very difficult budget season for many reasons. Besides the state and local reductions, we've had great increases in our fuel costs for our fleet of over 30 vehicles. In a normal year, I would come in asking for more staff. Our workload hasn't decreased, it continues to increase. And you've heard about many of our hot button issues this year. We had a significant increase in syphilis cases. We've had a banner year with rabies exposures, with an extensive hunt for one man who picked up and was bitten by a bat. And we're in the middle of another pertussis outbreak. So I could go on and on citing the many increases in workloads in our three divisions. But you all know about these things, and you also have access to our annual report. But knowing that you face this very difficult budget season, we have worked very hard to stay within your request to stay at 2008 levels. We've already covered a 4% decrease in state aid as directed by the governor, and we're facing another 6% decrease in several grant programs. So with OTR number one, which we will discuss shortly, there are four positions that we were not able to accommodate under your budget guidelines. So I urge you to support funding this entire OTR so that we can maintain our services. Staff are doing an excellent job, but they can't sustain the workloads without suffering the consequences or compromising the health of the residents of our county. So our first OTR, as I just mentioned, has four different positions in it. My mandate to the staff was for each of our three divisions that they needed to put forth some type of position, because we have already cut to bare bones. We couldn't trim anymore. So each of the three divisions has put forth at least one position, and environmental health has in fact put forth two. So I will let the division managers explain their OTRs and give you more information.
I'm Sigrid Connors, Director of Patient Services for the Division for Community Health, and I'm just going to speak very briefly about our nursing positions. We have 14 and a quarter FTEs, or full-time equivalent positions, to provide the frontline work that our division provides, and that's home health care services, maternal child, immunizations, communicable disease, rabies, HIV, lead poisoning, and there's more. But just as an example, our nurses last year did over 7,000 home and clinic visits for close to 1,500 clients. They also performed over 5,000 immunizations to infants, children, and adults, 400 rabies vaccinations. They did over 300 HIV tests. They did over 300 tuberculosis screening tests. So this one nurse, 0.77 FTE, is from the health promotion program. But this nurse really is an integral part of that team that delivers all of these services, because they are very busy doing the absolute necessities of their job, and they don't have the time that this particular nurse might have to attend to the special cases that come up. So I'm going to turn it over to Teresa Lisco, our health promotion director.
As Sigrid mentioned, the position that is in the OTR is the community health nurse. And there's a description of what that position does in your budget page. But I'm just going to give you one example of what this nurse does, because there are a variety of things she does. One of them is working with the diabetes toolkit, where we go into physicians' offices, and we also work with the providers, the other nurses in our health department, and work with them to teach their clients on how to reduce their caloric intake and cut down portion sizes. And one example is that when Susan met with one of the nurses who does prenatal care, that nurse had a problem with one of her clients who was pre-diabetic. She was 240 pounds. She's pregnant. And she didn't know how to work with her in terms of reducing her risk for a difficult delivery and diabetes. So she worked with her, and they put together what they could do to help this woman. So that is just one example. And how does that affect this? Well, that affects what it would cost this county to deliver a baby that might really be at high risk, as well as the mother. That's one example of what the multiplier effect would be for that position. So those are the kinds of things this nurse does, and I appreciate your consideration of the work that we do in terms of helping providers as well as other community health nurse staff.
Alice or Sigrid, before we move on, do you want us to ask questions about this particular OTR, or you want to do the whole presentation and then?
Why don't we do the whole presentation?
Okay, great. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Allinger, the Director of Children with Special Care Needs at the Health Department. As I'm sure you are all aware, preschool special education is but one of the Class A mandated programs the county is responsible for. In the world of preschool special education, the county or municipality is the fiscal agent. Just what does that mean? Well, it is more than the expected dollars and cents. As the fiscal agent of this large program, we are responsible for being knowledgeable and currently familiar with federal and state education regulations as they pertain to preschool special education, being knowledgeable and current and familiar with federal and state Medicaid regulations. This program is very heavily regulated by both of these agencies. Because we are the fiscal agent, we must ensure that all T's are crossed and I's are dotted with regards to each child's IEP, individual education plan, before we can pay a provider, agency, or school district, or before we can claim any funds from state ed or Medicaid. This means a knowledgeable professional must have frequent ongoing contact with special education directors of each school district, the New York State Department of Education, and New York State's Medicaid unit. We are also responsible for making available to each school district a current list of service providers and agencies available to provide whatever service a child may be deemed eligible for at their CPSC, Committee on Preschool Special Education, meeting. Thus, whatever service is written on their IEP. What does that mean? As a municipality, we must ensure that we have a list of professionals available to provide these services. home-based services with speech pathologists, physical therapists, occupational therapists, teachers of the deaf, hearing impaired, sign language interpreters, etc., special programs for children with autism, children who are deaf, etc., and transportation to these programs. A knowledgeable professional must work in tandem with the school districts to secure qualified professionals and all unique educational programs that the municipality must contract with to provide these services. We are also responsible for paying these professional service providers, agencies, school districts, and programs. What does that mean? Once again, a knowledgeable professional must be familiar with all regulatory processes to ensure each step is followed prior to payment, including but not limited to fully completed IEPs, stacks, prescriptions, session notes, progress reports, verification of services forms, and evaluations, to name a few, are on hand and completed per regulation and follow up with appropriate provider, agency, or school district when not. At least, last but not least, but among the most important, we are responsible for attending the CPSE meetings at each school district. This includes Ithaca, Dryden, Groton, Lansing, Newfield, Trumansburg, and when necessary, Spencer Van Etten, Newark Valley, and Odessa Montour. The municipality is part of the committee which reaches consensus when determining the IEP and service provision. Committee decision is no longer by individual votes. The municipality has equal say at the committee table. Please know that we have worked very hard to establish a collaborative and mutually beneficial working relationship with each district. Each school district CPSE chairperson regularly contacts and works with the municipality when addressing any child's program that is not typical. At many meetings, we are the voice of reason, along with the district chair, when passionate feelings arise. The district and the municipality support one another through these challenging meetings to help guide consensus towards FAPE, free and appropriate public education for the child. The licensed professional who fulfills this role must be very knowledgeable of early childhood growth and development and the various standardized, norm-referenced, etc., testing modalities used with this population. Last year, we had 386 children enrolled in preschool special education. Each of these children had at least one annual meeting with added meetings for unique, challenging, or complicated situations. In the Children with Special Care Needs Division at the Health Department, it is the Director of Preschool Special Education that performs most of these responsibilities. Without this position, the primary or bulk of the preschool special ed program responsibilities will be added to my responsibilities. Second, because a licensed professional must be the municipal representative to the school district, the attendance of CPSE meetings would need to be divided among other qualified licensed CSCN staff whose work or current caseloads are maxed in our other Class A mandate program, the Early Intervention Program. In a nutshell, these are the responsibilities of and pending impact of the loss of the preschool special education position on the Children with Special Care Needs Division. Thank you for your time.
Hi, I'm Liz Cameron, Director of Environmental Health, and the OTRs that we have are a half-time sanitarian and an additional 0.25 FTE for a summer sanitarian. The Environmental Health Division, we monitor and ensure drinking water quality, the safety of recreational and food preparation facilities. We investigate rabies and lead exposure cases as well as other environmental incidents. We regulate on-site sewage systems and residential developments, and we enforce anti-smoking and tobacco control regulations. We are dealing with an increasing number and complexity of regulations. In a number of program areas, we're dealing with an increasing number of facilities, and in other program areas, the facilities may not be increasing, but the complexity of each facility or site is increasing. Our workload has increasing and our staffing levels are now proposed to be cut. For our food service establishments, in 1997 we had 380 permitted facilities. That's increased to 491 in 2007, where the staffing levels have been constant for 10 years in the food program. On on-site sewage systems, we've had changes in the past 5 years. The amount of time that a staff person devotes to an on-site sewage system used to take about a day in 2002. We're now up to over 2 days in 2007, partly because of increasing regulations, and as one of my sewage program staff people says, all the good sites are gone, so the problems that we have now are in increasingly difficult sites. Our workload varies considerably. If we have a food-related illness outbreak, that's a very time-intensive undertaking, and it has to be conducted immediately. Rabies incidents have to be responded to immediately. Environmental lead exposure cases are also an area where we see a fluctuation, and it has to be responded to in a short time frame. We also need to be able to respond to environmental health issues at sewage systems and mobile home parks. In the summer, our workload escalates, especially between May and September. We have 31 children camps. They have to be inspected twice. We have 29 outdoor pools that must each, and beaches, they must each be inspected twice. We have 4 campgrounds that must be inspected. And in 2007, we averaged over 65 rabies investigations and submissions per month. That compares to about 36 of these investigations during the other parts of the year. As I'm sure a number of you attend the many festivals in the area, they can be a lot of fun for our staff. They're a lot of work. We have to permit and inspect all of these, not all of these, but the temporary food service establishments that are at these events. We were very happy with these temporary or the summer staff that we had this year. We had 2 part-time people working for us. They had an initial training period, but were still able to conduct 89 inspections. This included 42 pools, 12 children's camps, and 18 food service establishments. They also conducted over 49 other site visits, and in addition to conducting sampling and other activities, responding to complaints that has very much assisted our staff. Without the positions that we're requesting in our OTRs, it's going to be increasingly difficult to even meet some of the state-mandated requirements. For example, we're required to inspect half of the temporary food service establishments. We're finding it increasingly difficult to do this, and without the additional staff, we may not be able to meet that state-mandated requirement. In other program areas, we'll have to make difficult choices about what to do with the non-mandated areas. For example, mobile home parks. There is no state-mandated frequency for inspections of these facilities. We inspect any mobile home park that we have concerns with on an annual basis. But these are some of the areas we'll have to look at. We're dealing with other difficult cuts in funding. Our water grant was cut, received the initial 2% cut, and we've also been notified that it will receive the additional 6% cut. So instead of the $165,000 that was in the initial budget, we're now dealing with state funding or state grant of $152,000. This will force us to consider eliminating or reducing services that we've historically provided. So I'd just like to say that the 0.5 sanitarian and the summer help are essentially the minimum that we need to meet the increasing regulatory and program requirements. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. Can we focus on this OTR then? Any questions regarding those essentially 4 positions, some of them part-time? Martha?
Thank you. And I would ask that Monday, if your written comments could go to Kathy, then we can all get copies because there's more information in the things that you've read from than we have here. That'd be really helpful. I want to look at the in the big book, page 118, where it has your whole staffing kind of analysis, the whole list of FTEs.
And now I don't have to ask.
Okay. Now, I asked Norma this yesterday, and I understand that the 2009 column is everything, including if the OTRs were granted. This is the requested level. Okay. So what I see, I'm just going to go down this list, and I see the second one, community health nurse, down about a quarter. That's the second position on the list. Third from the bottom in the left-hand column, public health sanitarian, down a half. Clerical support staff on the right-hand column, down 3/10, down 30%. Director of preschool special education, down a half. Family and children's outreach worker, down 1 FTE.
That was a reclass, so that's a wash. We eliminated that position and created a public health social worker.
Okay. Is public health social worker in here? Okay.
Alice, if you're going to be answering, maybe you want to send the mic.
All right, so let's pretend that the whole debt's a wash.
Should be.
All right. Okay. Well, at any rate, now down on the WIC staff, that's, from what I can see, the only increase, and that's all federally funded, right? No local money in that. So even if all your OTRs are granted for these staff positions, it looks like you're down, you know, a quarter of a nurse, half of a sanitarian, 30% of a clerical support, and half of the preschool director.
Correct.
Okay. I just want to make sure I understood that. All right. So somebody else take a turn. I have others,
Carol,
but I'll wait.
Want to continue on that thread?
Well, now I'm not sure that I understand it, because on the totals, you're between 08 and 09, you're from 83.44 to 83.19. So the totals would indicate that you're shifting.
The WIC director makes up, the WIC staff makes up for the cuts.
The difference, okay.
More or less.
Well, there's one missing also.
So my question.
Really,
Carol, continue.
Yeah, so my question, I guess, is how did you decide which things to include as over-target requests versus keep in the base budget?
We're already at bare bones. I mean, we have already nickeled and dimed every line. I mean, we're at bare bones for travel and training, for supplies. We've looked at everything that we could possibly cut, and there wasn't anything else left. So that's when I went to the three division managers and said, you each have to put out a position because there is nothing else left to cut. We are down to people.
And for some historical information, you know, the difference in the last, say, 4 or 5 years in staffing, where does that come in?
We always get some fluctuation depending on the amount and level of grant funding that we get. So it will fluctuate a little bit each year. For example, last year, the bioterrorism grant was cut, so we had to reduce clerical time to that position. Now this year, the grant year that started in August, that funding was restored, so we could restore that clerical position. So it's, you know, every year there's a little variation.
I had a broader question about process and some of our decisions coming up. If indeed the legislature votes to continue with these recommended changes and not make any changes to those recommendations, that would be an increase, say, in this particular OTR of the 0.77 position, a certain amount of money. Are we allowing the department head with that amount of money to then allocate it as best they see fit, or are we specifically saying that must be used for, say, you know, the community health nurse?
It's only specific if you so designate, otherwise it's the discretion of the department head.
Okay. It's helpful for all of us to know then. Julie Kiefer.
I'm looking at just the OTR pages, which has line item entries. It's page 25 of the OTRs. And you'd think after all these years I'd know how to read this, but I guess I don't. In the department request, there are some negative entries and there are more positive entries. One negative entry, fourth one, on, the last one on page 25, says public health word, target minus 8779. And I just wonder what that is you're asking to be subtracted.
That is the revenue that will be associated with some of the expenses. So the revenues come up in this format as a negative number.
Thank you. I should have remembered it. I just haven't seen it yet this year. Okay.
And
looking at this quickly, were we to decide that this is not really what we want to have cut, the way we arrive at that figure is to take the total requested and subtract the total county administrator's recommendation, and that gives us the number that... Okay.
Other questions, Martha?
In the white book, white pages, page 138, looking at contracts, and let's see, the second line from the bottom is preschool service providers. And I see in 2005 was 2.8 million. 2006, it looks like there's a 2 missing, so that's 2.9 million. Then it goes to 3.5 million in 07. 08 was just a small increase. You expect, it looks like, for 09, 4.2 million and change. How do you project that? How do you know?
That is a million-dollar question. We project that based on current tuition rates, trends in what we're seeing in terms of service provision, based on someone attending the CPSC meetings and getting in the IEPs, we get a better handle on being able to project as the school year starts. Again, although the county's fiscal calendar is January to January, the school year is July to July. So when the school year starts in September, I won't really have a handle on what all of the services are going to be until I get midway into October. Mm-hmm. And once I see what all the services and tuition-based programs are going to be, plus state ed will begin to set rates for tuition. And as we all remember, no tuition rate is set in stone. They can go back 3, 4, 5, 6 years and change their mind. And when you see the larger jumps, it's because they change their mind more often. And we had to, or greater to a greater degree, if you will.
Okay, so it's an art. I understand. I just want to point out, I think I did the math correctly. See, that's a 20% jump in 1 year. Mm-hmm. In dollars. Okay. The next page, I see a significant drop in Bernie bus transportation for EI, for early intervention. It's not, I mean, in terms of the numbers we just talked about, it's nothing, but was there some renegotiation? Or?
No, actually more parents were transporting their children.
Okay. And then maintenance in lieu of rent for Brown, I think it's all for Brown Road. There are 5 lines here on 139 and 140. Or, I mean, I assume that's maintenance for your current building.
That's correct.
Okay.
And it's allocated to different programs. That's why it shows up 5 times. The total's $200,000.
Okay. And how's that going to work with Brown Road?
It's being held the same for 2009 because we don't have a move-in date at this point.
Okay.
Frank Proto?
Alice or Brenda, the of the four positions, if they're not, well, let me put it a different way. Of the four positions, could you say something about which ones, directly or indirectly, like the sanitarian positions, they're out scoping out work that has to be done, but those programs generate some income because of fees associated with permits in some cases. Are we endangering the ability to bill third-party reimbursement in some cases if we don't fund any of these positions, or are there any direct or indirect income lines that will be affected if we don't fund these positions?
Well, if the people aren't doing the work, then we can't bill for that service. So, you know, if you don't have the person doing the work, you can't do the billing.
Precisely. I mean, the fact is that there's a, not only are we losing the ability of that person to perform the task, there may be reimbursables that we can't collect because, do you have any, I mean, can you PFA a number that we would be losing? No.
What's PFA?
Plucked from air.
Oh, thank you. I don't think we really can.
No. But there is some direct, there is some indirect effect on any of the income stream, particularly in Liz's area, because if we're not out there doing, able to do that work, we may directly lose any billable items. Like examining a septic system, for instance.
Yeah.
Other questions?
Wait, part two. Are there any pieces of these that are reimbursable in any way? Do we get any state aid for any of these positions?
Well, it gets complicated because, yeah, they all get state aid. But even though this particular nursing position is targeted, we're under the civil service and seniority system, so it may not be this actual person that's job is impacted. So there's a seniority thing impacted. So it could actually be someone, and I'm just making this up, it could be somebody from Sylvia's unit that really becomes impacted by the nursing position that we've targeted in community health services. So it's really hard to predict until you vote on November 18. We won't know which position is impacted by this budget.
We have three other OTRs, but on this one, Martha?
I also called Norma yesterday about, well, I had a bunch of questions for Norma. And number, public health sanitarian, in the line items here, it seems the two slots, the halftime and the quarter time for the summer, are mixed in one number of 36,958. And I was I asked Norma if they could be broken down, if we could know which is how much. What?
We have the breakdown.
Okay. Yeah.
Frank.
Halftime position is 22,909. Ranges of 82,824,700.
Okay. And state aid
associated
7,917. Okay.
Quarter time.
Mm-hmm.
14,049. Ranges 5,058. State aid 4,855.
Thank you. Frank Proto.
Alice, back to the contracts for a second. The home health aid service providers, notice that had gone from a high of 327,000 in 2005. We're now looking at about roughly 305,000. Is that because there aren't as many people providing the service, or did they actually drop the fees?
No, what happened was that Medicare changed its reimbursement methodology, and they were encouraging less service, so there's fewer nursing visits and fewer home health aid visits that are authorized and therefore paid.
Yeah, it is a combination of that, a change in the funding eligibility supply and our ability to meet the regulations in our ability to place the home health aides.
Do you have any idea what you may not know the answer to this one, Sigrid, but do you have any idea what the home health aides are getting per hour?
I don't know that offhand. It is proprietary information, so I don't know.
I think all I can comment on right now, Frank, is I know a couple of them have cited livable wage agreement in the contracts.
A couple of them.
We encourage them to do that. Some of them have cited that in seeking their reimbursement from us as meeting the livable wage document.
Oh, that's good. Thank you. Good.
Go ahead, Martha.
Steve, did you have any particular reason why you included the nurse, the one community health nurse, and not the other positions?
In discussing the priorities of the department, it was my opinion that this was their highest priority. They didn't feel comfortable stating that, so I had to challenge and sift and, you know, trying to meet your guideline. That's the choice that I made.
Okay. Thank you.
The next two OTRs are recommended at one-time levels. Does people have any questions about the fuel or the equipment? That's OTR 14 and 15. Okay. Martha.
I can understand how the rollover and all the one-time, the equipment is not a Tyler, but why is the fuel request not a Tyler? Those are ongoing. Fuel is ongoing. Costs.
I'm trying to remember how we set this one up.
The department is in the process of getting rid of some very high fuel use vehicles, and we were one-time funding it to see what kind of effect it had on their fuel budget next year, because they have some Jeeps that they're getting rid of.
Right.
Should save them some money, so that's why we did that.
Oh, okay.
We'll move on to OTR 16.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. We have asked for a reclass of our physical therapist to make a rehabilitation team leader. And the reason for that is because the visits have increased. We've had 100% increase in the number of physical therapy visits we've made. We've also had increases in our occupational therapist visits. It's taking a lot of time to coordinate all of these visits. We now have the two full-time physical therapists, and we have four or five contract therapists. So it's important to coordinate the care with the nurses, with the physicians, with the hospitals, with the home health aides. And because of the increases we've had in nursing as well, we're just looking for some additional coordination to make sure that we're using our resources effectively.
Any questions on OTR 16? Martha?
Well, absent this reclassification, how is this being done now?
As best we can.
Sigrid's time. Sigrid spends a lot of her time doing this.
Yeah. It's the nursing supervisor for the home care program and the two team leaders. I pitch in as well, and we're just all trying to do our best. But we've had some errors, and this summer we had a problem because we ended up with some staffing. We didn't manage the staffing well because we had one physical therapist on vacation. Another contract physical therapist was also going to overlap a little at that time. We felt that we could handle that, but what we didn't know is that we would end up with one physical therapist on leave that was unexpected. So we ended up not being able to serve 33 physical therapy referrals during that time period. And if we really had the ability to coordinate these better, we wouldn't have had that problem. We also would have more time to coordinate and work with additional therapists because we need more therapists to work with our home care program. We need to recruit more, and somebody needs to work with those therapists in terms of educating them about our policies and procedures, doing supervisory home visits, and communicating with the physicians.
Frank?
Sigrid, as far as the home care is concerned, can you give us some idea of, if you know off the top of your head, the age span that you serve in the home care division? And I'm going back to the study that was done that shows that the population is aging in the county. Have you seen it? Where I'm going is, has there been an increase in 60 to 85s? And I can't imagine that there wouldn't be an increase, but I'd rather hear that from you.
I don't have those numbers right in front of me today, but last year I did a look at all of our numbers for the ages, and I remember seeing there was a significant increase in the frail elderly, or those 85 and older. And we also increasingly serve those who are over 100 years old. So we have quite a few, in fact.
Well, follow up?
Sure.
As the 30-odd cases you weren't able to address, would you care to guess how many might have fallen into that particular age bracket that you were just describing?
I'd say 75%.
75% of it? Thanks.
Mike? You said a question regarding the reclass logistics. So has the reclass been granted through the personnel department, and this is just a funding request following it?
No, we will not put in the reclass request until we know there's funding for it. So we won't initiate anything until we have your approval.
Thank you. All right, any further discussion? And I believe that's all from the health department, right? I'm sorry for being tardy and not hearing the beginning of your presentation. Okay, let's move on to mental health department. So those are OTR pages 36 to 38, and in your big book, it's 159 is the page. Welcome, Bob.
Is this okay?
Yeah, sure. As long as I get to call you.
So just a brief overview. There is no marked change in staffing patterns. The over-target requests that you're looking at are actually all in the one-time category. As you know, the mental health department serves directly folks with all types of mental illnesses in the county in a variety of different ways: clinical services, case management, day treatment, and various kinds of advocacy services, as well as oversees the system of developmental disabilities and substance abuse services for the community. In terms of just some of the state things we've been dealing with, the department absorbed the 2% reduction that we were confronted with as part of our budget here, and that's not reflected in terms of OTR expenses, and that impacted somewhat the county and as well as some contract agencies. The 6% challenge that we're faced with, we're, for the three O agencies on the state level, we're looking at about, and this is statewide, about $10 million one, but I really can't give you a meaningful breakdown of what that's going to mean at this point, as I've told Health and Human Services and the county administrator. At this juncture, we just don't have any good analysis of that. Probably greater concern may be the flat budget stuff, but we just have nothing meaningful to talk about regarding that. I'll just mention in passing, I could see challenge industries and also our substance abuse agencies potentially being impacted by some of the large state numbers I see, but I have nothing specific to talk about. As far as the specific over target requests, the county administrator has taken out a couple of requests. One was for one vehicle from two, and one was for some furnishings. I'm not pursuing those, and I would like to, our hope is we get the funding as recommended by the county administrator. As far as vehicles go, we support the notion of looking at strategies for either a county fleet or different creative strategies around that. The only concern would be losing staff time as we go to any kind of common parking lot, whereas we have experience with that. With the construction we had this year, we had our cars parked in the Cuga Street parking lot, half of them, and we actually did analysis of how much time it took to walk the sixth floor and get back. So that is a little bit of a concern. Any common thing, but generally we support the notion of looking at either a county fleet or a share program. Do you want me to just go over the various items, or
sure,
what's your preference?
And those begin on 177 in the big books. So let's start out with OTR 7.
Make sure we're looking at the same thing. In regard to the request for the outsourced compliance officer, this we're looking at a potential contract position for one year. We believe we are required to have someone on staff that is designated as a Medicaid compliance officer. This has to do with the implementation of the Office of the Inspector, Medicaid Inspector General. We've talked about that in Health and Human Services. And what this basically is helps create a strategy within a Medicaid billing department, such as the mental health department, where if there is accidents, abuse, or fraud, there is a strategy within the department to go actually directly to the board to articulate that. And also, the larger thing being really to try to prevent that. The OMIG, as it's affectionately called, Office of Medicaid Inspector General, is looking at taking back $1 billion by the year 2011. It's something like $200 million, $300 million, $400 million in terms of various health care entities. So this is potentially a preventative strategy in terms of the Medicaid audit, which is very, very real. For any Medicaid biller, is a very real issue. This specifically won't prevent that, but by using individuals with this specific expertise and even one step removed from the actual program operation, it could be a great help to us. We did bring in one provider of this just to do a training, and actually made some modifications just from that one pre-visit. So, go on.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Martha and Julie.
How can this position be one time?
The way it potentially could be one time, Martha, is if we use a consultant. That's what this would be. This would not be a county position. Bring in a consultant who would really establish the who would ensure that the program is well, and do a training and help establish it further, then it is potential we could do this with on-staff folks, depending on future staffing patterns, et cetera.
Julie?
I have the same question.
Okay. Any further questions on OTR 7 or 007? All right, seeing none, let's move on to OTR 8.
We've been working for an extended period of time to move to a true electronic medical health record. We're still some percentage of the way there. The particular software vendor we chose probably in the, it was about 1996, 1997, before most of us were here. And we are engaging in a process, partnering with the with ITS and Greg Potter to do a business process analysis of all our processes around billing, records, and clinical work. And Greg and his team are meeting one at a time with every all the stakeholders within our department. And what we're looking at is are we going in the right direction as we try to do this electronic medical record, which the new Freedom Commission record, the federal government, there's many good reasons to do this. Not only in terms of, issues with medication, issues of records, access, and legibility, the potential to, in emergencies or in school-based work, to get records off-site. So, and basically in terms of looking at clinical, fiscal, and other kinds of outcomes, we really want to wind up with the best product we can. So basically what this would be is sort of a placeholder which would potentially enable us at least to go with the more sophisticated version of the system we have now, or potentially move to another system. That's what this is really looking at. And I think we're approaching this with a lot of due diligence, and we certainly appreciate the work of ITS in helping us with this. Just the process alone of having another partner county agency come in and just sort of say, look, this is our process, and help and documenting the process from an outside, again, from sort of a fresh viewpoint, is interesting and helpful. And I think, should we use this money, it will be well used and very thought out. So,
Frank?
Bob, is that money that could be parked in contingency?
Parked in contingency?
Parked in.
Yeah. Say again?
Tell me more.
But parked in
parked
contingency?
In contingency is what you said, right?
Yeah.
I think you said parked.
Say yes, Bob.
In other words, could it be allocated but then put in contingency?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It sounds like you're not quite ready to push the button.
And, well, we anticipate the analysis to be done by February, and we definitely want to push the button next year.
Right.
I just thought it would be prudent to go through an in-depth analysis before we push the button with our current provider, et cetera.
How about the confidentiality of these records?
The systems, I could, let Greg comment on this, but actually I think it will go a long way to increase the confidentiality of records, because one issue now is that some of the, we do a lot of work now on conventional word processing software, which actually is not within a specific medical record system that has various safeguards involved with it, Frank. So it should actually increase confidentiality quite a bit, because really all the work now is done on computer systems now. It's just they're not in a defined database, a single-purpose database.
These would be active records. They're not inactive records, right?
Yes.
Other questions?
I mean, down the road, what we would like to see is a complete electronic medical record, and actually move away from paper and all the storage involved and all the various things going around.
Let me go.
Sure.
Are any of the records that you have now inactive records? That, and Greg's in the back. You know where I'm going, Greg. Is there anything that's eligible for the archive? For the state archives money?
Yes. One could submit a grant on behalf of the mental health department for any type, whether it's active or inactive records through the local government program.
Would this be eligible for that?
Yes.
I think it would be eligible.
Yes, it would. The difficulty now is that they have limited the ability for agencies to submit only one application outside of the county clerk's office. So internally within county government, that application becomes quite competitive. But yes, it is applicable.
Are they still, is this the type of thing we can do it on a collaborative effort that would enhance our chances of getting it approved?
We are working with the mental health department in terms of the process analysis. And one of the reasons to do that is indeed to submit for additional funding requests, whether it's through state archives or education or any other granting agency out there. That is typically a requirement or a mandate in addition to the general grant application requirements.
Yeah, and I was amiss in not mentioning that, Frank, that this will... I was amiss in not mentioning that the work we're doing with Greg's unit could potentially set us up to do this type of funding application. That's a good point.
That's okay. I blew it on parking contingency.
So, Frank, the concept to apply for one of those grants is indeed where we're heading. The question then becomes within county government, which project rises to the top and is ready for that submittal in when December rolls around this year.
Mike, your staffing from 08 to 09 looks like you're losing one of your supervisors. What department is that in?
That's in the continuing day treatment program, Mike. And what we've done is consolidated another supervisor with that program.
Thanks. Any other questions on this OTR? All right, let's move on to OTR 9, continuing day treatment.
Happens to be the one we were just talking about.
Huh? Well, yeah.
What color are they?
Yeah, sure. All the OTRs are recommended, they're one time and they're being recommended.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not forwarding the things that aren't being recommended.
Can I ask you a general question? Throughout the budget book, and there are places where we're applying for various equipment, bookcases, chairs, desks, etc. The State Office of Budget and... The state has a warehouse full of furniture that they're not using, some of which is new.
I think they put it on eBay, Frank.
Well, it's we were able to access that a number of years ago and we got Peter a snowmobile out of that at one time or something, a piece of equipment that he needed. You think they eBay all that stuff?
I was just kidding.
Well, it's like park it, right? I mean, computers and whatnot. Maybe through purchasing, maybe we can follow up on some of that because they have things that have never been used that are sitting in Albany.
You know, I know historically in the mental health systems, when places have closed, sometimes that stuff has become available, and you'll be in some county agency, and you'll see, old state office stuff. So,
it's worth it anyway.
Martha?
Actually, Good Hope Residential Home did just close, and I don't know if they have stuff left over, but things don't always fit. But I'm interested in. I mean, I know this is really the big bucks. If I can jump down to OTR 12, the blinds.
Is that the one that's been taken out?
Yeah, that's
has it been taken out?
Yeah, well, it wasn't recommended.
Okay, so you're saying you're not asking for that?
Not pursuing.
I'm not going to pursue.
Okay, and then the vehicles, one was approved, right?
One was approved, one wasn't.
And you're just okay with that?
Yes. We tried to get in the hybrid lottery last year. We weren't approved for that one either. But so we'll make a determination what the most expedient thing is. But
Okay. For what it's worth, if you and Arel can work out some way to do blinds so that you can help with the climate control, I think somebody ought to be able to find that kind of money. I think we're seeing... I'm really sensitive to that kind of issue where it's warm outside and I had to wear layers because I expect them to be freezing in this room. So if you can get some blinds to work that out.
I mean, actually, in that building, it is not an insignificant issue because of the whole structure of the building. But, mm-hmm.
All right. Any questions on the remaining OTRs? All right. Seeing none, Bob, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to move on now to the Board of Elections. Elizabeth and Steve, how are we doing today? And there's two seats right next to each other, open and available for the two of you. All right. So these are OTR pages 9 and 10, and then the big book starts at 65.
As you may have heard, the court-ordered implementation of new voting machines has really strained the resources on our office. The machines were supposed to be tested through the vendor, then through the state level, and then delivered to us. We were supposed to do a 10-minute test on each ballot marking device. It ended up taking a lot longer, and we did much further testing and ended up having to not accept half of our machines that were delivered to us. So this has been beyond our wildest imagination and time, and this is not even the full implementation. This is only right now for disabled voters. So we had looked when we were submitting the budget and knew we were trying a very conservative approach as far as staffing with the new machines because we were hoping in the end we would be just able to maintain the level that we had. But for next year, we feel very strongly with full implementation that we're going to have to add to our technicians because right now we have an equivalent of a quarter of position for them.
Yeah, so that's OTR 80
at
one time. Okay. Any questions? Martha?
On the second one, for the inspectors, I'm a little confused. You're asking for two coordinators.
Steve is going to explain
that. Yeah, sorry, I'm going one through.
Okay. Okay, no question on the first one.
Okay. Steve.
Okay, our second OTR request is we're implementing, this year we're implementing the ballot marking device portion of this unit, and that is only for the people that are unable to use the current lever machines. Next year, we're doing a full implementation, hopefully, of a totally new system, which is going to be new to voters all over the place. And there are things with that new system. One, we have to educate each voter as they come into the polling place as to what they're dealing with when they come in. And that's one of the roles of the coordinator is going to be to try to acclimate the voter, answer any questions they may have about the system. There's also things that, because of HAVA, that require this new system, if a voter undervotes, they put their ballot into the scanner. If it's an undervote, it automatically gets spit back out to them and ask them if they want to. And that's going to be something new that they're totally not expecting. Same thing with an overvote. We have to have people there that really know how to manage the flow of the voter when they enter, and also if there's questions that come up, how to deal with it. And because this is a brand new system, we feel that we need to do this the first year.
Frank?
Steve, how is it going to handle write-ins?
There's a mechanism for a write-in. You're going to be marking 95% of the voters, maybe greater, maybe 99% of the voters, are going to be handed a pre-printed paper ballot where they will color in their selections. If they choose to write in, it'll be a block that you color in next to a line. They write in their name. They submit that into.
And did I hear you, if you don't mind?
Yeah, sure.
Did I hear you correctly that there will be someone on site as each voter comes in to educate the voter on how to use the machine?
Answer any questions they may have. We will have a video at each site, a continuous loop video that will demonstrate to them how to do it.
Is the state considering letting the polls open earlier or stay open later?
They have not done anything in that, but we right now, any voter that is in the polling place at 9 o'clock, you know, we have to stay there until they have voted, completed the process.
Martha.
I'm curious that you've got two coordinators, but 43 poll sites. How can, it sounds like two people have to be.
No, it's two per poll site.
Two for every poll site.
Because it has to be a bipartisan team.
That's only on election day.
Oh.
And they have to be trained, in addition to being trained on all of the intricacies of the portion of the machine that's for the people that cannot fill out their own paper ballot. For the,
okay, so this is for 86 people.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
One day and some training before that.
Well, then there's... trying to find 86 people to do this. Okay.
Yeah. Well, we got it for this year.
Okay. I didn't understand that. Okay. Can they do all this? How can they get to 43 places? What kind of HAVA money are we getting for these things? For all this?
We are getting some HAVA for these coordinators, none, but we are getting HAVA money for the monitors and the technical stuff that we need for the videos. There's hope that the state will help provide some of the video, you know, the people that, you know, provide the videos. Mm-hmm. We may have to do our own, but, you know, there's a lot of, we are getting a full grant for the equipment.
Okay. Well, one of our concerns, though, I have to address this, is one, because of the state cuts, they took some of our polling place accessibility money already, and that was part of the grant. But we were fortunate enough that while we were waiting to implement, that we got right on that and were able to make a lot of improvements already. So that wasn't going to take a big hurt on us. But the voter education money runs out in March, and they haven't extended it. So we're using some of it now, and we're going to use as much as we can, but we're afraid that we won't have it for when we really needed it.
And the other thing that's going to enter into this whole process is that the word is now that the state is off track as far as having machines that will be certified for use next year. This machine we have, they've certified the ballot marking device portion, but there's the tabulator portion, which counts the votes as it goes through. That has not been certified, and they're not on track, and they're not sure that it's going to be done in a timely manner for us to get these things implemented. So, you know.
So we're not decommissioning the old lever machines, are we?
No. They're not going on eBay.
The state sends a weekly report to the Justice Department because of the court order. And their words are showstopper problems, in jeopardy, code issues. So it's looking like we're probably going to have two systems again next year. But then again, the judge shouldn't have made us implement this year. I understand why he did, but it wasn't ready, and that's why we're having these problems.
Greg has a question, and then I do.
Back on OTR 81... it seems to me that this 86 coordinators, based on what I've seen personally, I would think that's a minimum required. But how likely are you to get 86 qualified people?
Well, we're working on it this year. You know, we have to have 80. We have this in the budget for this year for the ballot marking device portion, and you know, we're still working at it. But, you know, it's the same thing with inspectors. We're always looking for inspectors. So, you know, anybody that's out there that's Democrat or Republican that wants to take on one of these roles and help us out, we're more than willing to talk to them.
Thank you.
Do they have to be New York State, like, residents?
Or actually, Tompkins County.
They have to be Tompkins County residents.
And they have to be a Republican or a Democrat.
Right.
I'm having some difficulties.
I have a quick question about, who's the company that certifies these things now, since, you know, one of them that did, got in such hot water?
New York State actually does the certification, but they are not doing the testing. The testing is being done
by
Is this Cystest? Cystest is the name of the company.
Okay. All right. I have questions from Carol and then Martha.
This is not my question, but maybe we should be asking people to vote on both the old machines and the new machines, just in case. Compare the results.
That's a great suggestion.
This is a question. Actually, it's back on 80. Is that okay? This discussion it has to do with the expertise required from the technician versus the expertise that you're developing on staff. Are these different capabilities, and will you eventually have to develop that expertise yourselves after this first year in terms of using these machines and taking the time to set them upright? If you don't have this technician and you have a problem with the machine, I assume you're still going to have to learn how to oversee that.
We're all working together on the machine when we can. What our problem is, it's nobody was ready for this. Like, the vendor was not ready. The state wasn't ready. So we're getting procedures the Friday night before the primary. So we've already decided and had to write our own stuff in order to do it. So we're all working together, trying to figure out how to work the machine if there's a problem, that type of stuff. So everything's really been on our own teachings.
We're fortunate that the technicians that we have in place now are up to the task of dealing with these machines, and they've really helped us work through a lot of the issues. And the coordinators are a little different. They have to learn from the technicians so that they can be comfortable with the machines and show other people how to use them.
Right, but we're not going to rely... Are we going to rely on these technicians for knowledge about using the machines and keeping them working that we aren't also going to develop among permanent staff?
Oh, I think, we will be developing them gradually among permanent staff for sure.
Martha?
Just an aside, I heard on the radio that Ohio is doing some interesting things where to try to discourage long lines and try to reduce problems on election day. Things like encouraging people to vote by absentee, no excuse needed, just anybody can get an absentee ballot, so at least some percentage of people will be out of the system early. And one centralized site per county or whatever, where they've got a polling machine set up at a centralized location set for 7 days, like for a month before the election. I think those are some interesting ideas. I know that those aren't in your pay grade, but it'd be great if New York State would loosen up some of the things that really make it difficult and require everybody to show up on election day. It doesn't seem like the smartest thing to do in this.
Well, some of the things like the absentee ballot thing, which I fully support, is mandated by election law, and until the law gets changed, we are kind of tied.
No, I know.
Same thing with the 7 days in advance voting.
Right, those are state-level decisions.
Yeah, but trying to ensure that we have enough equipment at the polling sites, we do have some say on that, and we work real hard to make sure we have enough, particularly in the presidential year, that we have enough machines available. What lines don't develop.
All right. Moving on to the next OTR. It seems pretty self-explanatory, delivery of the systems to and from voting locations.
The only thing was when we submitted the budget on this OTR, that is a lower price than it's been costing us to move the new machines. That's only budgeting for the new machines to be moved. If we have to move the old machines, we didn't budget for that because the reports weren't coming out until after the budget was submitted that we're in jeopardy of not making it. So we may end up having to come back for that.
Okay. Steve.
If you do come back, then do it as one time, because that will...
Yeah, that would be one time, definitely.
So
hopefully. Yes.
Any questions about that? Any other questions about, for the Board of Elections? Okay. All right. Elizabeth, Steve, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and with that, I'll call a break, and we'll get started again at, I don't know, what do you want to do? 5:30, we'll start again at 5:30. All right.